Hello, this is Michelle Weston for Wellness Learning Curves 2.0. It's great to be back with you. And I am thrilled to sort of talk about something that I wanted to do a one-on-one with my listeners. And that is, what is a coach? Why would I need a coach? What is a health and wellness coach? What's a wellness coach? I bet you these are questions that you've thought about and didn't quite know where to go or find out in layman's terms what that means. So today I really wanted to share that with you because when I have people on, I'm choosing coaches and patient advocates and patients and professionals and integrative practitioners. And the reason is that we come together to help coach a patient, coach a client through a chronic illness, through chronic conditions. And those of us who are living with that sometimes wonder, well, why would I need a wellness coach? I have a doctor and I have, you know, a therapist and all those things. But a coach is someone that you choose to work with to really think about how you would make change and shift. And one of the most important things that's happened in the world of science and psychology and coaching is something called neuroscience. So I'm going to start with neuroscience because get comfortable. And let me share some people's thoughts on this from my studying and what I have a tendency to gravitate towards when I work with people. There's an amazing woman named Jenny Rogers, and she talks about coaching skills. And she had an interesting take on why coaches need to know about neuroscience. So why do coaches need to know about neuroscience? Because coaches need to have some sort of understanding of this material because it's honestly overwhelmingly the most important single recent development in our field. And Jenny Rogers goes on to say, overall, the message is that there is a biological basis to human psychology. So my role as a coach and others in the health and wellness coaching category is to work with people on the changes that will make a difference in our clients' lives. And living with a chronic condition, we want to help you make differences in the quality of your life and within your life. And what the neuroscientific research shows is that emotions really drive human beings. That's our behavior is driven by our emotions. You know, you have friends who are more emotional, who wear their heart on their sleeve, so forth. And I just want you to understand where and what's going on. There's research that's been done that demonstrates it's safer for a human being and their brain in particular, to do what it's always done. Think about that statement. What do I always do? How do I handle things? Do I handle things fight or flight? Do I shut down? Do I get louder? Do I feel heard? Do I not feel heard? How do I feel about love? All of those emotions, for some of us, are more at the top of who we are. And when we're talking about that, I don't want you to think that go under the assumption that choices are rational, because sometimes they're irrational. And the research in neuroscience also demonstrates for most people, most humans, it's safer for the brain to do what it always does, as I just said. And the work of the brain, well, that means that you're really working on something called the limbic system. And that's what good coaching grounds itself in, the limbic system. It is the emotional center of our brains. And
the brain's there to rationalize. It's not to be rational. It's something that many people believe. It's there to rationalize. And good coaching, when it grounds itself in the limbic system, means that everything, and I really mean everything, in coaching involves emotions, including the relationship with the coach. So when you're in a relationship with a coach and you choose a coach to work with on your well-being, on your health and wellness coaching, realize that initially that's like your gut reaction. So why is it important to have a really strong relationship between a coach and the client? Well, because you want certain things to show up. You want to have a certain amount of warmth. You want the ability to role play with that person. And things like warmth and acceptance and liking create trust. So when we don't have trust, coaching is honestly impossible. So trust is the essential thing we need for healthy coaching relationships. And there's a man named Daniel O'Reilly. He was a professor, and he wrote a book in 2008 called Predictably Irrational. And what's interesting is how he wanted to study our irrational behavior. And he wanted to see how to test our rational behavior and show that in our irrational behavior, one of the things that, if you think of the placebo effect, is if you believe in a pain relieving medicine and it costs $2.50 a dose, will have a tendency to attribute more pain relieving power to that than if we believe it costs a mere 10 cents. So it's worth more. So of course you're going to think it's working even more because it costs more. So for instance, would our system work if we didn't examine the irrational part of our brains? And what we've found is that it's important to look at being irrational, being ready to jump in, but also that everything is not rational, and look at that other flip side. It's also what I'm going to talk to later about positive psychology, which has happened 1990s. And that really is that psychologists and coaches and those working with teams and with organizations and businesses, we're looking at people's positive character strengths. And I'll talk about VIA Strength Survey in a bit, but I really wanted to talk to you guys about what a coach does. So it's important to realize that one of the things that we're driven by is that we sort of want to make people happy and find the easiest way to get there. And if we're examining the different parts of the brain, they have different jobs. And one of the most important things is the power of an imagination. And that's like, that just rocks. To be able to use your imagination, for me, is a plus, not a minus. And the brain doesn't seem to make a distinction between a remembered or an imagined experience, or even an actual experience. On the positive side, this is why visualization of a peaceful scene may calm the amygdala, the part of our brain, the amygdala, down, or why recalling a success can precondition us to repeat it. So what you're hearing is, and it comes from a Norman Doidge, it's a book called The Brain That Changes Itself. And Dioge describes an experiment where mental health and a mental rehearsal was shown to be virtually as effective as the real thing. So two people, two groups, total beginners, were taught to play a game. And after they learned how to play a game, they were taught to play the piano. Two matched groups of total beginners were taught to play the piano. And one group practiced on a real keyboard, and the other one sat in a room in front of a keyboard that it was imagined, playing the pieces, including hearing the sounds and moving their fingers. And both groups devoted, I think it was about 2 hours for this activity, for this research. And what happened is the group did actually practice both. But there was one group that was slightly, but not a lot, ahead of the other group. And both were assessed. And what they found was that the ability to change the brain, something called neuroplasticity, if we really work on that, our brains can shift. So if you had an imaginary keyboard, but you had the ability to bring yourself in and say, this is a keyboard, even though it just looks like paper, I know it's a keyboard. I know this song, I'm following the song, and I'm learning the song. And when I've talked about this before with other people, neuroplasticity, understand that our brains have a certain amount of cells which decline over the years, and that makes new learning difficult. So that's not quite the truth, because the brain, as Jenny Rogers called, is plastic, and it's able to make connectiveness at any time. And it's a concept that is described as neuroplasticity. So taking energy and focusing energy and your intention can change your brain. Coaches work on this with their clients. I know you're thinking it's a physical shape and it will, you know, how is it going to change? So let's think about this. For instance, if you're a violinist, they've found, have a hugely expanded cortical region in the brain, because that area of the brain governs the use of the left hand. Think of involved in fingering. When you're learning, you're using that left hand. And it's interesting that taxi drivers in London have to pass a test to be licensed. You have to know where you're going, different than it is in New York and Boston and Chicago and LA. But you have to really know the map, know your areas of London. And it's amazing to see these professional taxi drivers. They can take that hippocampus area, the memory center of us. So that's the hippocampus, the memory center, and they can expand it and enlarge it. So they remember more because it's spatial detail. In both of these examples I'm sharing, the intention is really important. And that means that you can change things, that you have the result of being able to practice and being able to commit and do some hard work. And that's pretty amazing. So what is the best way to change behavior? Well, when working with a coach, the best way to change behavior is not to work on what is wrong. Sounds familiar. I was talking about positive psychology, but to develop new behaviors. So you want to create new neural pathways, which can, over a period of time, become more dominant, more in the front. Let me give you an instance. People who suffer from OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, rather than teaching them to confront these behaviors, which trouble them, you know, you keep washing your hands, you think your hands are dirty. It is proved more successful to teach them how to interrupt the thought. Okay. You can increase the plasticity and the readiness to change simply by paying attention to the need for more mindfulness. And another thing that Jenny Rogers points out, emotional triggering. So being able to relax and be more mindful is something that coaches are brilliant at. I think so, especially under health and wellness coach, because you want to be able to build on the plasticity of your clients' brains by combining it with the power of our imagination in a number of ways. And your aim is to create more awareness of awareness. So if you were more aware of your awareness, you would be really ahead of the game. I'm never shy about showing people ways to relax. No, it doesn't have to be woo-woo. It doesn't have to be having your legs crossed, doing a formal meditation. You can take a walk in the park. You can take a hike. You can swim. You can take a yoga class. Whatever works for you is the thing that's important to developing a stronger ability to tap into our ways to be able to relax and to be mindful. The Eastern philosophers talk about this a great deal. They talk about, you know, how do I feel now, right in this moment, and what is happening? And they have a tendency to go through their body and check in. They check in with their head, with their gut, with their heart, with their arms and legs, their face. They listen to their breathing. And with that relaxation, what's happening is we're relaxing those tense shoulders, relaxing those muscles that are strained and more tense. And what will happen is that you'll stop doing that shallow breathing that many of us do, and you'll be able to really take in more air from the upper part of your chest. So let's talk about this. I'm going to give you an exercise that Jenny Rogers shared, and I really like this. Try one of these techniques. Okay. I want you to settle down quietly into your chair. Uncross any crossed arms or legs. Keep your feet firmly planted on the ground, rooted to the ground, and relax and release any tension in your body, starting with your feet, working slowly upwards to your calves and your quads. Relax your hips, relax your stomach, relax your back. Take your arms and make them liquid. Let them just relax. And as you breathe, notice your breathing. Put your arms on the sides of your body at your waist, on the sides of the cavity of your lungs, and point them towards the middle. And as you breathe in, you should feel your hands being pushed out. So picture this. Picture your breath and breathe in through your nose. You can hold one nostril if you want to breathe in through one nostril, or you can do it through both. But then I'd like you to blow the breath out as if you are trying to gently blow out a candle that's lit. Now, count steadily and slowly 7 times for the in-breath and 11 times for the out-breath. Concentrate on this, closing your eyes and repeating this at least 15, 20 times. Andrew Weil created this to relax people as well in stressful meditations. When they're in a business meeting and they're having a hard time, you can do it with your hand. It doesn't have to be your whole body. You can relax using those numbers to relax your hand, to tighten it up and then relax. And what does this do for you? Well, you're distracting yourself by focusing on your body and the methods of being able to breathe fully. And then doing that leads to becoming more mindful. And you're entering a place that I love, which is an intentionally created state. Positive states. It's a very positive state because a number of hormones in the brain, dopamine, gets released by listening to music. It's also similar in quantity for the amount that is created by taking mushrooms. If you were going to do that with a very talented person who could take you through exploration. And the dopamine really just makes you feel high. And a trance state that's probably that really creates that receptivity within your brain, going from back and forth and back and forth. So by slowing down your breath down to your steady self, if you were even hooked up to an EKG machine, an EEG machine, you would see that the electrical impulses in your brain would be producing alpha waves that are also associated with calmness and shutting down that visual cortex rather than the beta waves, which are associated with alertness, with busyness, with stress. And like any other discipline, using relaxation needs to be practiced. And you can practice it at will. And there is a chance for you to visualize and take yourself through your body. And when you have a chronic condition, I think we need to check in with ourselves more. I think that the ability to remember that our brain is plastic, it can go on making new connections indefinitely, whether you're 8, 18, or 80. But as the reverse side of this strength, the more we reinforce a habit, honestly, the harder it is to change. So one of the best ways to do this is through mental rehearsal. If you practice using your brain to connect, the neurons in your brain will start to connect even more interestingly. And those of us with MS, this will help strengthen the myelin sheaths that reinforce the pathways, which is so cool to me. So first, you want to look at some steps. You want to think about what the goal is. So what is it that you want to change? It should be stated in our present tense. What is it you want to do? It should be something positive, and it should be as specific as possible. So don't say, I want to avoid staying at the office late every day. It's too vague. It's negative. So the brain will not remember it. So what if you said, I leave the office every day at 6 p.m. with a light heart? Wow, what would that feel like? You'd be taking the positive energy, sending that out into your brain, into the world, saying, I'm ready to shift how I am with this. So my habit of always working so much, I'm going to shift that. Then I want you to look at triggers and what triggers the challenges, the problem that you have, and think about how you want to respond differently. So you could think about your emails and how many come in and out. And I know I can deal with them tomorrow. So staying later and pushing yourself because it's a habit in that isn't really something that you want to keep triggering. You want to explore that and see other ways to look at that. how you feel about your thoughts and your feelings will have your mind faced with another stimulus. If you think to yourself, I'm calm and I accept that it is fine for emails to wait. So there, it's connected to that behavior of being always triggered. Oh, I have to stay. I have to keep doing this. I cannot stop. What if you entertain the possibility of saying, you know what? I'm going to let these emails that I haven't gotten to be here and I'll get to them tomorrow. Fourth, imagine your actions. Think about what you're doing. Imagine in detail. So what if you were thinking, I get things done together. I say goodnight to my colleagues at the office and I walk out calmly to the car park or to grab a subway or a bus. And you look forward to a pleasant evening. So the habit is that you're going to develop that you have downtime and time that you're on. What are the benefits? Well, the benefits will give you the ability to think like this. If you were able to work with this small habit, tiny habit, I am proud of myself, I am calm and energized, and I'm enjoying my feelings of freedom. And when you rehearse all this in your mind and you make it a smoother sequence, and you can visualize yourself doing the actions and hearing sounds, any sounds, and experiencing any feelings. So now, what would happen if you rehearsed it again and again and went to reach 10 mental rehearsals a day? If you did that, you would have the ability to shift. And that's really what we're talking about with neuroplasticity, neuroscience. It's a very, very interesting way to look at. You can retrain your brain. I've talked about the Buddhist brain. Another way to look at how do we get into that space that is more positive, that I'm not beating myself up about things. So when we talk about wellness as a concept, normally when we think of wellness, we think of living life with the highest levels of awareness, of being conscious, of making choices, being conscious, of connecting with others, of being more self-accepting, of love, of purpose, and also of meaning. So wellness is an individual's life journey. And there was a man named Abraham Maslow who had a concept of self-actualization. And it applied to your mind and your body and your spirit. And it helped us figure out how would we define wellness coaching. So since we know that psychology is the study of behavior, what about looking that psychology is the process of applying the principles of psychology to help people change their behavior? I think my favorite person to do this is Michael Arlosky, and he talks about wellness coaching for lasting lifestyle change. Why do it? Well, wellness is everything about living well in a very conscious way. And when you come across wellness programs and wellness coaching, they are about helping people to improve their lifestyle behaviors. Sometimes we talk about the five stages of change, and we all go through it in different ways. Sometimes we get stuck at one longer than the other. Sometimes we pass through things that others have a harder time with, and vice versa. But understand that wellness coaching is relatively a new field. And as it emerges and the world discovers the value of it, which becomes more and more, we want to be able to help people see that it's an application of using principles and processes that wellness coaching can help you reach the goals of lifestyle improvement for higher levels of wellness. And when I say wellness, you know, people are always asking, how are you? Well, you know, many times I just say I'm fine. Actually, most of the time I say I'm fine. I, therefore, for the grace of God, I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not with a walker. I'm not with a cane. All those things to me lead me to believe I'm pretty fine. And I've been working on this for over 2 decades. And I wanted to make sure that I had the best quality of wellness, of well-being that I could create. Why am I sharing this? Because I think that that's why I became a coach and wanted to create this radio podcast, Wellness Learning Curves 2.0. I wanted to take it and step it up because you need to look at where you are to know where you're going. And when we learn about the illness wellness continuum, which is what those of us with a chronic condition think about, when we can collect information and look at how we understand what the wellness illness continuum is, I want you to remember that Jack Travis started this, and it was called the illness wellness continuum, and it was two arrows going in two different directions, and it was the wellness paradigm. And what you wanted was you wanted to find out, were you more in a growth state or an education state? Were you more in a state of checking out your signs, your symptoms, your disability? And those go a certain direction as opposed to the high level wellness of being aware and educating yourself and setting yourself growth markers. Wellness isn't just a state. It's a state. And well, let me try that again. Wellness is simply a lack of a disease process or simply the absence of illness. Just as there are degrees of illness, there are degrees of wellness. So John Maslow spoke about self-actualization. And self-actualization is not static. It keeps moving all the time. And it may be to speak of as being able to pinpoint one's level of wellness, for it's fluid and it's ever-changing. So when they ask you from 1 to 10, how do you feel about pain? That's a basic way to explain that. And what we see is that people have the ability to look at how they're feeling and find a greater benefit in looking at feeling well. So if I had to give a good definition of that, Arlosky talks about that. Wellness, which is like coaching, is about a whole person and all the aspects of their lives. So physical fitness, nutrition are very important, but those are only two dimensions of wellness. And it's interesting. The paradox of any holistic concept is that to be inclusive more than you usually are, to really understand, we usually have to break it down into its component parts. And why we do that is that when we can maximize the whole, it's better than the parts. The sum of the whole, sum of the parts is better, you know, getting to the whole. So that statement of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts is quite true. And every aspect of our lives affects every other part. So an emotional conflict at home will affect our day at work, and it may even contribute to a headache or some of your symptoms showing up. If we improve our diet, it may result in a more sustainable energy all day long or a better night's sleep. Sleeping through the night can also help you handle your levels of best wellness. And to ground you, I think that it's important to think about that a coach is not a therapist. A coach is guiding you on your journey, and they believe in what they believe in, and they want to help you look at each dimension of wellness. So dimensions of wellness, again, John Travis probably did one of our first wellness wheels. It's literally a wheel. Think about 12 dimensions of wellness. So what would be 12 dimensions? Think of a pie and cut it up into 12 pieces of a pie. So there'd be self-responsibility and love. And two would be breathing. Seriously, breathing. And three, sensing. How do you take in things or smell something? Is watching something happen? Well, how do you use your senses? Fourth is eating, nutrition. Five is moving, as I like to say, physical activity. Some people say exercise, but I like physical activity better. How do you feel? What's your feeling? And seventh, thinking. There's also eight, which is playing and working. And nine, my favorite, communicating. 10, intimacy. Intimacy with your partner, intimacy with your relationships. Number 11 is finding meaning. And number 12, which is perfect for it to be, is transcending, moving above and beyond. And if you have these 12 dimensions of wellness, as a wellness coach, you know, we find that our clients may make the best progress when they realize they are primarily responsible for their own health. Remember what I've been saying all of these months? You are responsible for your body. Doctors are there to help with medicine, have ideas on how to keep you well, and so forth. When we look at how loving the person is toward themselves, we get to see how connected they feel towards the world around them. So we want people to take ownership. That's where we begin to make progress. If you can take ownership of self-responsibility and that making that best progress when they realize they were responsible for their own health. Breathing. When I say breathing, coaching about breathing is, it's not only helping your client to increase their awareness of their breathing, because we all breathe all the time. Fish breathe, dogs breathe, every living being breathes in some way. And if you can help people be easier and more relaxed in their breathing into their lives, the dimensions of the layers of breathing, at the way we either block or allow energy, can tell us a lot about how we are stressed and how we can find ways to relax. If you're sensing, wellness is about being conscious as you're living, and that's important. You know, you'll hear a great way of a saying that I love, lose your mind and come to your senses. It's a famous quote. It's a Gestalt therapist said that decades ago. But exploring this dimension can help our clients to balance out their intellectual tendencies, to become more aware of their bodies and what they can be learned from them. So knowing your body more and more, for example, around 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, I start to hit a wall. If I've been out all day since, you know, early morning, I'm going to hit a wall. And I know, and I can sense that it's time for me to reboot. And being aware of that helps me create more balance. Eating. What is good about eating when we talk with our clients is, I don't use the words diet. I do use the word nutrition, but these terms, it gives you a way to explore the role they have in eating and how it plays into your client's, you know, life. So not only is it about what we eat, but it's about how and when and even why. And it makes a difference to be more mindful when eating, because people digest and take in their world and what is said to them and what they say to themselves. So being fed, eating, nourishes our bodies and our brain. So there you go with eating. Moving. You know, moving allows our clients to see all their movement in perspective and not just the time they're spending working out. I am saying to you, seriously, go dance, go take a walk in the park, go hike somewhere, go work out if that's your thing, and try stair climbing and use things like park your car farther away from the mall if that's your thing. What it does is that notion helps us to create a better wellness plan that may work where exercise programs have failed. So that's why we keep using the words moving and physical activity. They're just more powerful than I'm going to the gym to exercise. And how we feel, this helps us look at the emotional components of wellness, and it helps us open this area to exploration through coaching. And thinking about things is our clients need to understand how thoughts are intertwined and interrelated with feelings and health. And the coach can help the client to examine the thinking that limits them and to make new conscious choices. That's an amazing skill to have in your pocket, living with a chronic condition, to be able to look at your play and your work and find balance, to be able to enjoy joy in a person's life, to really go out and have fun. And you want to create that balance there. And when we communicate, it's a life skill. It can be smooth or it can be more bumpy. And it reminds us that wellness coaching is not just about diet and exercise. Honestly, it's about our ease of connection with others and the integrity of our relationship with ourselves. That's what communication is. And I want you to think about intimacy this way. It's a dimension that allows clients to explore, if they so choose, a dimension of healthy living that is often ignored. And that is being a sexual being. Intimacy is important. We shouldn't lose that. Sexuality and expressed in our lives means a lot. A kiss means a lot. A hug means a lot. And that's important to know that you have those forms of life energy. It really is. It's one of the best sources of that. You also want to find meaning in your life and purpose. And that's time to explore that dimension and making changes in any other dimension of living. But finding meaning and purpose is centered to many definitions of being well, of wellness. And when I say transcendence, I'm sure you're wondering what that is. And it's a dimension of wellness that may seem a little woo, esoteric. It's surprisingly how often it strikes a chord with clients that I work with. So what we're saying, transcending, it's a quest to bring one's life into balance by exploring the transcendent side is actually a very ancient endeavor that still speaks to the soul. This dimension can be foundational to other dimensions. And being able to explore that is also really important. Being able to share that with you and share these pieces of us is also, again, an important quality of working with a wellness coach and tapping into these pieces of ourselves. So when you're looking at your wellness foundation, work with a coach and see where you can start and make sure that you're applying. Use that coach to really, really look at the benefit of if you took newer actions and developed different habits, what would that be like? And that means that it's every aspect. So think of your mind, your body, your spirit, even your environment. And for those of us with chronic condition, it's important because all these things help. Why make sure that you're moving? Movement, because that includes the ability to create more endurance, to strengthen ourselves, and to be more flexible. And do those things that challenge you and that you tend to avoid. So moving, literally, and also moving within your head can help people really look at things different and pay attention to what's going on and make this about your own personal growth. Working with a coach is a time to get excited about continuing to grow as a person. And much of the motivation to be well in every aspect of our life will follow if we make it about growing personally. And you need to practice self-care. It's really important. Practice taking care of yourself instead of everybody else. And others benefit the most from a healthy and happy you. You can write it down. You can put it in a journal. You can use other methods. There's wellness books of journals. There's also apps out there. And you're going to think I'm crazy, but move your body outdoors whenever it's possible. Take in a deep breath. Make our natural environment, our world, an ally. Think about what it feels like. It's one of my favorite things during the winter, fall. I love taking a crisp, deep breath of air. You just feel your whole body just wake up and relax. And I want you to remember something also, that when you're being coached, coaches know this fact, and we want you to learn this. I want you to remember that you are not your work. You are not your condition. You are not your illness. So get out there and chart a course of change, making sure that we are really focusing on how do we get here? What do you want? What's your desire? And where are you currently? It could be a location. It's also where you currently in your focus. If you want to create a less body fat, if you want to sleep better, if you want to change the levels of where you are, looking at your current location, where are you currently? Where are you right now? Not ahead of you, not behind you. And where do you want to go? What's your destination? Who do you want to become? And if you can look at where do you want to go, you'll be able to state it specifically, and being able to own that and say that is really important as a commitment. Where are you going? Commit your course. What are you going to do as a client, making a commitment to do? What do you want to take as an action? And what are your strategies? And we can help you talk through that, but we're going to depend on our clients, on our coachees, because we're partners, that you're going to have ideas on this. Also look at what you're up against. What are your challenges? And what are your obstacles in your way? And what blocks your path? And what are strategies to meet those challenges? And what are ways to overcome hurdles that are blocking you? To be able to co-create with a client strategies to adjust and to bend without breaking and feeling cut off from things is really important. So that's what you want to be able to focus on when you're working with a coach, a wellness coach especially. What do you want? What are your desires? where are you currently? What's your location right now? And what's the area of focus you want to work on? What's your current space and time? What's your destination? Where do you want to go? And what are you? What are you making commitment to? What do you want to do? And what are you up against? That's your challenge. It can be more than one challenge. And what are the ways to overcome the hurdles that are blocking you? What are the strategies on how to meet challenges? That's what coaches are there to help you work through. One of the tools I really appreciated was when I learned 2015, 2016, is called the VIA Institute of Character. Around 1998, Martin Seligman was connected with Ryan Nemec and Robert McGrath, M-C-G-R-A-T-H. And they were working on how do you appreciate and ignite your positive personality? What does that mean, your positive personality? Well, positive personality comes from your character strengths. And what are the powers? What are the important things about character strengths? Why do you care about character strengths? Well, you care about character strengths because you want to look that it's not every personal strength that is a character strength. We have personal strengths that aren't character strengths. But when you look at the VIA classification of it, you're looking at taking a survey, and it's online. It's very easy to get to. You can log on to www.viacharacter.org, and you can take it for free. And that's pretty amazing. And what you're going to learn from that, and what you can share with a coach and share with, you know, really share it with yourself, is how you go about handling things in the world. So the research, you know, how do we look at things? How do we look at strengths, characters, character strengths? And how do we look at virtues? Why do we look at virtues? Because it's possible for strength to reflect more than one virtue. And some strengths are actually, they're more clearly connected to one particular virtue than others. And don't get hung up about all these associations. They're meant to give you a general idea of how strengths tend to cluster and reinforce each other. Give you an example. When I took the VIA strength study, the first five are the most important. Definitely look at the first five. And that I had a lot of tenacity. And I also had bravery and resilience. And that was a good thing for somebody with a chronic condition, that I had the ability to be tenacious about making sure I was as well as possible. And that I also was able to know that being brave and trying new things and being okay that some things work and some things don't, and I was willing to take those chances with new studies and so forth, was important to me. And also having a big heart and caring about other people's emotions and feelings is a big part of me. Those virtues, if you think of virtues, let me tell you what virtues are. Virtues are things like wisdom, like humanity, justice, courage, temperance, and transcendence. And when you take those six virtues and you add the character strengths that are more about your creativity, your curiosity, your bravery, your love, how you work as a team player, your forgiveness, what hope is for you, what it affects is your relationships and your work and your community and you. You with a chronic condition, it helps you see how you can use it in situational themes that you have. You come home, your husband's there, he wants to tell you a story, you're tired, do it anyway. Seriously, sit down, ground your feet, and listen to that person, that spouse, share with you their day, because obviously it was important enough that they wanted to share it with you. If you're dealing with kids, how do you get kids to do things, to do their homework? This is a place where you can help your kids. You can help them because you're collaborating with them. You're working with them. Picking up trash in your neighborhood. Doesn't matter. You know, all those things are part of our character strengths. And they're just, character strengths are basic elements of our identity. And when we express these character strengths through our thoughts and our actions, what happens is that the research that's been done since 1999 is that we tend to feel happier. Wouldn't it be great to just be happier, feel more connected? How about feeling more productive? And what is particularly remarkable about all these character strengths is that they can contribute to your well-being, to the quality of your relationships, and to your community. Seriously, community, your teams, it really does as a whole help you. Because let's do an example. Your curiosity helps you explore new ideas. If you're curious, you are looking for new ideas, new ways to do things. If you wanted to look at places and people, it allows you to collaborate and see the value of everybody's contributions. And that's curiosity. You want to hear what people are saying. And bravery helps you move out of that comfort zone to challenge yourself, challenge others, whatever that comfort zone is. I can't. I hate when clients say I can't. My question always is, can't or won't? Because it sounds like a won't. And I can't help you with that. But if you are willing to consider that you could do things differently, well, that's pretty cool. And when you're looking at things, why do you care about strengths? You care about strengths because you want to know that your character strengths matter. And we shift our focus all the time, and we examine the importance of character strengths through a positive lens. Imagine that. And the benefits of character strengths have been demonstrated in many places: healthcare, business, education, coaching, psychotherapy, counseling, of course, and coaching, to name a few. And what's important is that specific benefits of character strengths have been linked to each of the main elements of well-being. We're talking about positive emotions. We're talking about being engaged, engagement. What is meaning for you? What is a positive relationship? And accomplishment. They've been connected many times. And the newest research that we've seen is showing that techniques for helping people boost their strengths can have important advantages over techniques that focus on correcting your negative issues. But I want you to remember, we're going to learn from and reframe the negative. When you're working with a coach, we want to help you with that. We want to reframe the negative. We want to flip it on its back, because you're uniquely you, and we want to really pull into that. I think that explaining to you what a coach does with their client, with their coachee, is an opportunity for you to understand why I have different guests on all the time. I want them to be able to talk about ideas and how to improve your life, whether that's acupuncture or seeing a nutritionist, whether it's changing how you're out in nature. And all those things are really important to your well-being, to your quality of life. And what I want from all of you is a better quality of life. So if you have any ideas, via characterstrengths.org, go take that test. Definitely let me know how you do. And I'd love to know what those like me are seeing in their top five. And you can contact me through mjwellnessnavigator.com. And I would love to know how things are going with you. And if there's anything that you've been looking for that you'd like me to talk about, or find someone who's an expert in that area. So I wish you peace, and I wish you the best. And welcome to Talk Therapy. Talk enrichment, talk radio for women, because what we're here to do is empower you. Have a great day.